We're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! You know, I don't think I have to identify that too much. I think everyone knows what we're talking about. Former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, who finished third in the Iowa caucuses this week after leading the polls there for weeks, raising millions of dollars and earning what might now be considered the Kiss of Defeat nickname frontrunner. John Edwards of North Carolina was second, and John Kerry of Massachusetts won the Iowa caucuses. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott. Yes. Would you call that Dean's I Have a Scream speech?
I know other did. I know some unnamed wags did. I'll leave that to them. Iowa just behind us. New Hampshire, of course, looming ahead in just a few days. How do you see the field of Democratic candidates for president that's left standing?
Well, I think that the candidates have started acting as though next Tuesday was election day, not New Hampshire primary day. That's to say, as in the debate on Thursday night and ever since, they have virtually stopped attacking each other and have been saving all their fire for President Bush. You know, John Kerry is now the front runner, and he displays a new kind of self-confidence.
Richard Gephardt, after, I'd have to check in the control room and look. Did Mr. Gephardt finish fourth, fifth, sixth, way down under any circumstance? A vastly respected member of Congress did finish fourth, to double-check. Do you see any of the candidates more likely than others to draw his support? Which raises the question, what does an endorsement mean nowadays anyway, given all the eminent people who endorsed Governor Dean?
That is right. To answer your second question first, endorsements have become a great tradition in this country, and I myself have trouble remembering thinking of any candidate ever elected to high office because of those who endorsed him or her. Mm-hmm. And that's right. I think a major factor for Democratic voters on the Gephardt thing was that they're looking for electability. Some may be disappointed if they were really Gephardt supporters and may not choose to vote at all. I think for the most of them, they're going to make subjective judgments as to whether it is Kerry or Edwards or Clark or Dean who has the best chance of beating Bush. That has become... electability has become a major factor in this primary contest.
And have you noticed a different tone for Mr. Dean's campaign this week?
The tone is different in the sense that they're turning all their guns on President Bush, and the early indications that they would begin attacking each other and trying to bring each other down, that is waning. It really is. All of them are saying, look, whoever wins this thing has to meet President Bush, so let's concentrate on him.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the president, delivered his third State of the Union address on Tuesday. It is not traditionally a political speech, per se, but on the other hand, in an election year, probably not a telephone message doesn't become political one way or another. What points in the speech did you notice throughout?
Well, the main political point that seemed to be that the president was saying it's a dangerous world out there and therefore no time to switch horses. It was remarkably short of new legislative real initiatives. There was the initiative about going to the moon and then onward to Mars didn't even figure in it. That was his one major initiative in his speech earlier. A lot of values stuff, if you can call it that, marriage, steroids. Some of it, as on jobs and taxes, sounded as though he was really defending his program against the Democratic candidates.
Anything unexpected you noticed in the speech?
In
the president's speech.
I missed the word.
Unexpected.
No, there was one remarkable passage, I don't know if it was unexpected, in the course of which he said that in his weapons inspector, David Kay, had identified, now listen closely, dozens of weapons of mass destruction related activities, right? That if you listen not too closely, you think that a lot of weapons been found there. 3 days later, David Kay resigns from his position, saying he didn't really, in terms of weapons, he didn't really locate anything.
He did talk about laboratories and programs.
Laboratories, programs, things that could someday be used, things that indicated hopes, all the rest of it. But if we're talking about weapons in terms of an imminent threat to the United States, hardware, he didn't find it.
Turning to Iraq, the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani wants direct elections to choose members of the Transitional Assembly as opposed to the U.S. plan for a series of caucuses. Seems to be a popular word this week. maybe the Ayatollah Ali Sistani said, I don't know. Well, in any event, what do you read? Today we read that Ahmed Chalabi, yes. who a member of the Governing Council, has joined him in that request.
Yes.
Paul Bremer has gone to the UN. Right. How do you see the situation getting resolved?
Well, I think it's going to be resolved if the UN is willing to resolve it. It really is quite remarkable, after all, the scorn that's been heaped on the UN, that President Bush has to go to the UN and say, please help, I can't get out of this alone. And what's happened is that the Shiites, Admiral, Grand Ayatollah Sistani, has now indicated that although as a majority in the country they would like to have a direct election and establish their own power, he's willing, if the UN says that there isn't time to organize a direct election between now and June 30th when power is supposed to be transferred, well then maybe he'll go along. That situation looks as though it may be on its way to resolution, and if it is, they owe a big, big thank you to the United Nations.
Thursday, the U.S. Senate approved a $328 billion spending bill. What did you see in it?
Well, you know, I saw $373 billion in it, which is the money to run the government for a year, which is well on its way. It started last October, and finally they passed that. Then you find little things like $500,000 for a pedestrian overpass in Las Vegas and $10 million for a museum in Anchorage. If you want to know where that money comes from, you have to know who the senators from those states and how important they are. Mm-hmm. And now the president proposes to limit non-discretionary spending to less than 1% if it's not security. There go a lot of school lunches and poor people ending up in emergency rooms.
I did want to, we were talking about getting into the in the political year. You have said, as we've sat here before, that it's often the incumbent's election to lose.
Yes.
Were we reminded in the State of the Union address and of course the budget bill that passed today that whoever is president, the power and party in the White House, is able to use the power of incumbencies in ways that might be subtle as well as grand in the election year?
I think that's right. And I think it is true that that it is President Bush's election to lose. Everybody is now saying you either do or do not, because there's no really startlingly important Democratic candidate. The Democratic candidate, whoever it is, will win if the president loses.
And finally, it's not yet certain whether the Mars rover Spirit is fully online, but what do you hear in between those peeps?
I'll tell you, Scott, I have developed a certain affection for that brave little robot that goes around saying, I think I can. And now NASA has an anomaly team working on it. I like anomaly team. I think all of us every now and then need an anomaly team.
Thanks very much, Dan Schuer. Yep.